Good morning. It's Wednesday, October 9th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, how to think about polls in these last few weeks before Election Day, the move to finally get rid of lead water pipes, and a Nobel Prize winner says, thanks, but beware of my invention. But first, to Hurricane Milton, which has picked up intensity at a dangerous pace on its way to Florida's Gulf Coast. Experts believe it could double in size before making landfall in the next day or so. This is coming on the heels of Hurricane Helene, which hit the region less than 2 weeks ago. Even experts who've spent decades monitoring hurricanes can't seem to hide their alarm, like John Morales, a hurricane specialist and meteorologist for NBC Channel 6 in Miami, who got emotional earlier this week when giving the weather report.
It's just an incredible, incredible, incredible hurricane. It has dropped 50 millibars in 10 hours. I apologize. This is just horrific.
He went on to report how heat, driven by climate change, is a critical factor in the way hurricanes intensify. Hotter air and water makes a hurricane spin faster and produce more rain. And the Gulf of Mexico has been at record temperatures for most of the year. We called up Morales and asked what was going through his mind during that broadcast when he got choked up.
Just empathy for the future victims of this hurricane. I know what hurricanes do, and I know how they wreck lives, well, take lives, but also wreck lives in such impactful ways.
He told us it's frustrating to see so many storms like this forming so often, despite decades of warnings about the risks of climate change. And he says it's getting harder for him to hide his angst during his reports.
The increase in severity and frequency of extreme weather events has changed me as a weather communicator. I am seeing these events where the potential for devastating damage is just increasing in such a short time span. And at the same time, they're coming frequently, like one after the other, just like Helene and Milton. So I think people have noticed that I'm not the same cool cucumber, and it's because of extreme weather events that are driven by the warming climate.
Morales says for decades, he felt confident that he could guide his audience through disasters by focusing on a calm, clear message. But he sees hurricanes and his responsibility to communicate the growing threats from the climate crisis differently today. We asked him what people in Milton's path should do before this huge storm makes landfall.
My message to people is that if you were ordered to evacuate, you needed to have followed those instructions. If there is still a chance to do so on a Wednesday morning, then do so immediately as long as you can do it safely. Don't stay at the coast, on the West Coast or Gulf Coast of Florida, in an evacuation zone because you're likely to have to face a storm surge that is unsurvivable.
You can follow Hurricane Milton and the latest developments in the Apple News app. It's less than 4 weeks until Election Day, and polls continue to suggest we're looking at a very, very close race. A new Time Siena poll out this week points to a narrow lead for Kamala Harris, with slightly more voters saying they see her, not Donald Trump, as a break from the status quo. But it can be difficult to know what to make of these data points, and people on both sides who remember feeling burned by polling in 2016 and 2020 might be wondering, should I trust today's polls? Joining me now to talk about what polls can and can't tell us at this stage in the race is my colleague Gideon Resnick. Hey, Gideon.
Hey, Shamita.
So start by talking to those people who are sort of cautious about believing polls after the last few presidential elections.
Right. A lot of that skepticism comes from the fact that polls underestimated support for Trump in 2016 and 2020. Mm-hmm. And Trump is running again this time. So a question you sometimes see people asking is, are the 2024 polls underestimating him again? And it is a fair question. Unfortunately, it's one we won't have an answer to until after the election. But it's worth remembering here that polls in many states were off in 2016, but the national polls were pretty spot on, particularly towards the end. Meanwhile, we have more recent polling in 2022 that was historically accurate. So it's not as simple as broadly saying polls have been terrible. Still, they have absolutely lowballed Trump's support in his previous two runs for the presidency.
Right. So why did that happen? Why some of that inaccuracy in the past?
I think first, it helps to understand a little bit of how pollsters conduct a poll. So they're typically calling 500 to 1,000 people. That simple fact means these polls are not perfect. They're dipping a ladle into a giant lake, if you will, looking at the water they scooped out and trying to draw conclusions about the entire lake. Mm. Maybe by dumb luck, you picked the only spot in the lake where there's a ton of algae, and maybe the lake is teeming with fish, but your ladle happened to scare them away. You would look at your sample of ladle water and say, well, this lake is overrun with algae and devoid of fish, and you'd be wrong on both counts.
Right. Okay. Point taken. But pollsters know all of this, and they adjust for it in different ways.
They do. They look at gender, income, race, education, and try to make sure their sample more or less resembles voters at large. But to go back to 2016, part of the reason polls were off that year is people who had been telling pollsters that they were undecided disproportionately broke for Trump in the campaign's final days, which it was very difficult to predict. But pollsters think the other big problem is that they weren't reaching enough voters without a college degree. And some studies after that 2016 election found that the voters without a college degree that pollsters were reaching were different from the voters without a college degree they weren't reaching. That for whatever reason, the non-college educated voter who supported Trump was less likely to have responded to their surveys. That might have also been a factor in 2020 polling as well. That is referred to as non-response bias. Basically, your poll results will get swayed if some group is just less likely to participate.
And there are some groups that are just hard to reach in the traditional ways that polls are conducted. I'm thinking about young people who don't want to answer a phone call, even non-English speakers, right?
It's a great point. And all of this is why you hear pollsters talking about surveys that use a lot of different methods to reach people, calling landlines and cell phones, for example, contacting people online. To go back to our lake analogy for a second, maybe you scoop some water out in one part of the lake, you go to another part and get some more. Then a couple days later, you toss out a net as well. You combine all of that to get a better sense of the lake writ large than just that one small ladle could. We've heard pollsters talking about making a concerted effort to weight their polling, basically looking at who is over or underrepresented in their sample and making sure they adjust their results to account for that. So, for example, more polling now is weighting to education levels. That is a big response to 2016, where, as we talked about, Trump was fueled in part by non-college educated voters. And there are results from 2020 now, of course, that can provide another basis for weighting. But as 538 put it earlier this year, no method that any one pollster is taking is an exact silver bullet.
Okay, so returning to the most recent national polling that we're seeing this week, where Harris has a small lead over Trump, how should we be interpreting that poll? And I guess polls in general as we get closer to Election Day.
So a bunch of polls or an average of polls are going to give a more reliable picture than just one individual poll that might get talked about on social media. It's also helpful to make sure that it's not a partisan poll and has a large sample, and to keep considerations of the margin of error that's listed in mind. So just to point out, that Times Siena poll from this week has Harris's lead in the margin of error, so it is still a toss-up race. Mm-hmm. More generally, a takeaway can be that really polls are simply always imprecise. Trust the polls, but also trust that polling is always subject to error.
Okay, we'll be watching them in these next few weeks. Gideon, thank you so much.
Of course, thank you.
Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. More than 10 years after the water crisis in Flint, Michigan brought attention to the health risks of lead pipes, the Biden administration finalized a rule Tuesday that requires cities to get rid of lead pipes over the course of the next 10 years. The rule also establishes a first-ever national requirement to test for lead in schools that get their water from public utilities. President Biden spoke about this at a rally for Vice President Harris in Wisconsin yesterday.
There's no safe level of lead exposure, period. None. The only way forward is to replace every lead pipeline and connect the American people to clean water. No alternative.
An estimated 9 million U.S. homes still get water through lead pipes, and replacing them will cost at least $45 billion. Now to the Supreme Court case we mentioned on yesterday's show about so-called ghost guns. After oral arguments yesterday, NPR reports that the court seemed to tentatively support the Biden administration's efforts to restrict these gun kits. Many of the justices' questions were focused on whether these kits were close enough to functioning weapons to be regulated as guns. One notable exchange involved Justice Samuel Alito, who led the questioning against the lawyer defending government regulations.
I put out on a counter some eggs, some chopped up ham, some chopped up pepper and onions. Is that a Western omelet?
No, because again, those items have well-known other uses to become something other than an omelet. The key difference here is that these weapon parts kits are designed and intended to be used as instruments of combat, and they have no other conceivable use.
The court's decision will come in 2025. And lastly, we are in the middle of Nobel Prize Week. Awards are being announced every day. Yesterday, the Physics Prize was given to two scientists for laying the foundations for artificial intelligence. In his acceptance speech, University of Toronto researcher Geoffrey Hinton, the so-called godfather of AI, surprised some people by warning the world about the risks to humanity that he believes his work created. Canada's public broadcaster, the CBC, called him later to ask him to elaborate.
Fairly soon, probably within the next 20 years, we're going to develop things more intelligent than us, and we've never been there before. We have no idea what it's going to be like. And we should be working hard now on how to make sure it doesn't take control away from people, because what we care about is people.
Hinton developed machine learning that would go on to power products like ChatGPT. After resigning from Google last year, he's been an outspoken advocate for AI safety and regulation. For more on the Nobel Prizes awarded so far and all of the stories that we cover today, head to the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Reporting from Box explores the rise of something called gray divorce. More couples than ever are splitting up in their 50s and beyond. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.